Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and want-to-be author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation, and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media, and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
I'm Jennifer McKenzie, and my new book is Navigable Ink, out with Transit Lounge. I'm going to read an extract from a poem called Kalimantan. One of the themes in the book is the environment and climate change. And this poem is dedicated to a young Indonesian activist, Manuela Shinta. It's quite a long poem, so I'll just read the first section. Kalimantan. The lure of diamonds brought them initially. Mangroves slink into the peatlands. Chainsaw and caterpillar tractor leaching tannins, a burning smell like no other. The forest, not only us, the forest. Canals dug deep, megaphone forest clearance, ironwood logs illegally cut, a tangle of weed and nothingness. Palm oil plantations to the horizon, to the azure oceans of plastic. Burning, burning, burning. Smoke haze 20 years off, but this is a different smell. I pick the wild fruit and it is bitter. Oh, sweet taste of my youth. You can hear the breathing, the soft voice of elders in the heart of this place. The forests are burning, pollution index 2000 plus. Peatlands burning, particles of death to the lungs. Here at the heart, we are helpless without succor. Through winding road to the heart we go, a convoy of motorcyclists deep into the centre. Winding road, motorcycle diaries to the peatlands, the journey was long. Into hovering death, haze thick, oh, our dripping jackets, oh, our clinging skirts. What we can offer, masks, medicines, a fan of toothbrushes, rubber trees, blissful sandalwood ash collateral, setting up a kitchen for the firefighters, a burning smell like no other, our motorcycle diaries honeycombed in trauma, written in charcoal, mourned in blood.
I love there's a line in there, to the azure sea of plastic. Burning, yes. burning. And the image that I have there is those images that you see coming out of documentaries of Mediterranean seas and the seas around the Pacific, where up on the shore it's just lapping one plastic bottle after another.
Yes.
And in the skyline, the burning of those beautiful forests. And that is so representative of our world right now, isn't it?
Yes. Well, when I wrote this poem, you know, I wrote it sometime last year. And then, of course, early this year, it sounded like us here with all our bushfires. And so it had another kind of resonance after that, another tragic resonance.
There is this incredible story about how you pulled this book together. Can you please talk to me about the history that has inspired this book and the poetry within it? Because it's pretty amazing.
Yes. Well, the collection overall is a homage to the Indonesian writer Pramudia Anantatur, and he was one of the most important Indonesian writers post-independence. And during the 1965 attempted coup, he was arrested and his library was destroyed, and he was eventually sent to the island of Buru in the east of Indonesia as a political prisoner, and he wasn't released until 1979. After that, he was under house or city arrest in Jakarta. So quite some years ago, I was offered the opportunity to work on an untranslated book of his. It's called Aras Balik, or Cross Currents. And at this point, he was still under arrest in Jakarta, so the copy was smuggled out. And so this novel was set in the 16th century, at the time of the Portuguese coming to Indonesia and the Malaysia area. And so I began translating that, and eventually it became a master's thesis. So all the papers went into a box and so on. But years later, after I'd published another book called Borobudur, which also has an Indonesian setting, I began to think that I'd like to do something about Pramudia. So it was quite a long process in getting to the point where I actually started writing these poems and thinking of ways that I could bring the translation I'd done into the book.
And what did you want to achieve by doing that? What was it that his story inspired in you?
Well, I think as a person, he represents someone who stood up for his beliefs to the detriment of his well-being, that he was an incredibly principled person and with ethics involving, say, political freedom, independence. I like the way he looked at history so that you could see patterns in the past which could guide you to the future. So there were themes in his work which were very attractive, themes regarding the environment, political leadership, particularly in times like now, freedom from oppression. All these things were very attractive about him. And so I wanted to amplify those themes in the book, because I think they're so important for us today.
There's a line in the blurb for Transit Lounge for this, and it's actually one of his quotes, and I love it. And it says, "Each injustice has to be fought against, even if it's only in one's heart." What is the heart in your poetry that has come from this?
Yes, I think in a way this book is standing up for the things that he stood up for, in a way that I think they're kind of universal tenets of justice, in a way, that we want good government. We don't want other people's landing on other people's land and exploiting them. We want people to achieve their best and to be creative individuals. So I think there's so many examples of that in his writing. And there's humour as well, which is good. So it's a kind of, I think Lucy Van mentions, she calls it fugitive humour in the book. So I think there is something of that there is a kind of wry appreciation of the foibles of other human beings in his work. But I find him a very inspiring kind of person, and I think he has something to say to the present day, and leadership is something I've certainly been thinking about in recent times when we've all seen how important it is.
And also around the environmental and conservation issues that are obvious within the work and just within the piece that you were writing there and obviously within his work. What messages are you really trying to connect through your poetry in reference to our current fight with climate change and our look towards the future on that?
Well, I think in this book that there's a thread, there's a kind of history of environmental care. But one of the interesting things I discovered while working on this book that in the 16th century there was a Sundanese king who actually planted a forest of rare trees with a specific aim of conserving them. And that site is now where the Bogor Botanical Gardens are situated, because the climate there is slightly cooler and much damper than in other parts of Java. So that was a fascinating thing to discover, that this idea of environmental care had a long history. But it was an incredibly interesting story, because when I first went to Java, all the guidebooks said, oh, Sir Thomas Raffles set this garden up. And when the British were briefly there in the early 19th century. But although he did do a bit of redesigning of it, the actual garden had these 100 years old history.
Wow. Oh, so rich.
And yes.
Choosing poetry to express, talk to me about that choice, about the choice of doing this through poetry.
Yes, well, I think because I've written, basically since I was a young student. So it's always been the way that I've, I suppose, expressed what is central to me, that it's kind of years of working, I suppose, through image and meter and, the usual kind of poetic constraints. So that's the way I tend to think. And I do write a bit of prose. I mean, I write reviews. But I think when I was about 16, I was very lucky. I had this wonderful art teacher who became a well-known artist, actually, Les Kozatz. And he was quite an inspiration, because he wasn't, the usual boring kind of classroom teacher. he'd take us to his studio. He had friends in the art who were young artists like him, and so you'd hear all these stories of them meeting up, and he'd talk about gallery shows that were on. And so I was so intrigued by this, and he would also give us writing lessons, or he'd have these techniques that he'd encourage us to write as well. And, at that point I wasn't sure whether to go on with painting or writing, but I think I felt that writing was for me. So by the time I went to university, I was already starting to write a bit. So I've had quite a lot, many years practice at it.
When did you publish your first poem?
There was one at the university magazine. I had some. And then my first publication in the Age newspaper. It was way back in 1972.
So, fantastic.
Yes. So
that would have been quite a big deal too, wouldn't it?
It was, yes, because in those days it was actually a very good supplement.
Yeah.
And everyone read it and read the poem.
Yeah, and so there was cred in that, yeah.
Yes, there was. It was very exciting, you know. I think I was very, very fortunate. I had some great teachers at university, like Vincent Buckley and Chris Wallace Crabb. And also the Melbourne poetry scene at the time was very lively. There was all kinds of poetry being spoken and read at that time. It was very exciting.
So it was almost like the perfect time for you
to discover
this craft. Yeah. Fantastic.
Definitely.
Divine timing, so to speak. That's great.
Yes.
And when did that evolve into you publishing your first book?
Well, it took years and years because after that, you know, I'd publish poems in journals and magazines and so on. And then I began working on my book, Borobudur.
Mm.
And that Borobudur, it's about the architect of Borobudur in central Java, and it required an enormous amount of research. And because I found I knew very little about it. And so this research and writing went on for years. And during that time, I had two children and other things going on. So it just went on and on. And then, I don't know, I just put it in a drawer. I didn't write much for a long time. And then I eventually took it out of the drawer, gave it an edit, which I'm glad I did, and sent it off to Barry Scott at Transit Lounge. And so that came out in 2009. So
by the first publisher you sent it to?
Yes.
Wow.
Transit Lounge like books, you know, about travel or, you know, especially Asian-related themes.
Mm.
As, you know, it's not the only thing they do, but so I think it appealed to them for that reason. Yes, so it was a very easy introduction to publishing.
I want to talk about your writing process for this current book, Navigable Ink. But the first thing I want to ask is, how did the original manuscript or transcript land in your hands?
Well, it came because my supervisor at Melbourne University, I think, visited Primudia. And so he offered it to me because at this point I was hunting around for a good topic, because I'd had a few false starts and he thought this would be a really good one for me given my interests.
Mm.
So that's how I got it. And then Primudia gave his blessing, as he put it, for me to work on it. So that was wonderful. So that's how it happened originally.
It's amazing. I'm listening to you and it's making me realise that at different points how important teachers have been trigger points for you to be able to move forward in your art each time. Have you noticed that?
Yes. I think that's very true. I think one of my favourite books is Camus' The First Man, which is an account of his childhood and how he actually became a writer. His childhood was incredibly poor, but he had a teacher who saw something in him. And it's an extraordinary story of, you know, someone living in quite extreme poverty, really, actually became this extraordinary writer. So, yes, I think teaching definitely, and I think other writers in a way are teachers.
Yes.
Yes.
I agree with that completely. Every word we read is a lesson from someone, whether we know it or not, in someone.
That's right.
So going back to your writing process, yeah, talk to me about what your process is, how the ideas come to you, how you form your poems. Is it piecemeal, or is it a poem all comes at once? How did the book come together?
Yes, well, it had a fairly slow start, and then I had a few poems that I was getting together, so that somehow there was a picture appearing. And I'd had some very good conversations with a fellow poet who was really urging me to get back to this manuscript, because, you know, we had a similar interest in this period and the region. And so I opened the box and got back into it. And I think once I had this sense of what I was going to do, not in a definite way, but I could see that I could use this book in a sense as the basis of a collection. And once I got a few poems together, and then I had another meeting with Transit Lounge, and they were interested in this whole idea. So I thought, right, I just stopped working, and I just, in a way, I sort of live like we are now in lockdown. So that I had a very regular kind of day, so that each I'd be spending several hours a day on a particular poem. And when I'd work through one poem, it would then kind of move towards the next one. I'd have some idea about what I'd do for the next one. So it kind of, I was in that kind of zone, I suppose, over several months, where I just slipped back into it and so kept working.
Like a flow, almost, like you're in a flow. And one.
Yes.
So each poem, was each poem that you were writing then inspiring almost the next poem to come?
Yes, that's right. And I had a kind of goal with each, so that I wouldn't repeat the form of the last one. I wanted to have different kinds of formal poems on the page, so that it would be kind of interesting for me to and challenge me in that way, but also I hope for the reader. I suppose the title of the collection, Navigable Ink, in a way was the image. Because within that, it kind of contains the idea of writing, the idea of water, and of movement and islands. And so that they were the kind of images I was working with all the time. And I wanted to represent different parts of Indonesia in the book, because although it's essentially focused on Java, as Pramudia was a Javanese writer, but he was still looking at the whole country in a way, and especially in this book that I was translating, Cross Currents or Aris Balik, the book travels to Aceh and to eastern Indonesia, and so I wanted to bring all those parts into it.
What triggered your fascination with Indonesia?
I first went there when I was about 25. I went to Bali and Java, and it just had an enormous effect on me, particularly Java. It was quite a very powerful kind of attraction to the place, to the environment, to the culture. And it's something that still, it hasn't diminished. Every time I go back there, I feel as ecstatic as ever. Yes, I just love the culture, the dance, the art, the environment, the climate. It seems it's a kind of elemental thing, I think. It's a kind of response to nature, to stone, to air, to atmosphere. It just seems to trigger, you know, this really poetic response from me.
Oh, how beautiful. That's beautiful, Jennifer. I think that is actually a lovely place to sort of end on. I'm going to wrap up just by making sure that you let everyone know where they can go and find the book and where they can find you.
Yes, well, Navigable Ink is published by the wonderful Transit Lounge Publishing. So you can order it direct from Transit Lounge. It's available around the country now in Readings, Dimmicks, Avid Bookstore, a number of places.
And just something that we always ask, can you recommend another female author that you're reading at the moment or that you have been reading and that you love?
Yes. I thought I'd recommend my friend and fellow Transit Lounge author, Catherine de Saint-Phalle. Catherine published 5 books in France before she moved to Australia, and her memoir, Poum et Alexandre, was shortlisted for the Stella Prize. And her most recent novel, which came out late last year, is The Sea and Us. It's a beautiful, poetic and evocative novel, and it moves between Melbourne and South Korea. The characters are lovely. She has a very delicate lyrical touch. I really recommend her work.
Oh, I think I have to go look her up. It has been really interesting talking to you today, Jennifer. Congratulations on releasing this book. It sounds like a culmination of a life's work for you.
Thank you.
I'm really sorry you didn't get to celebrate it in public with people around you.
It's very sad.
I hope people go out there and buy it and read it and share in this achievement and sharing this life's work with you. The poetry sounds incredible.
Well, thank you, Kel. It was lovely talking to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at writesforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Writes for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now.
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.